A warm welcome from Amsterdam, and thanks for tuning in to a new episode of Game Consultant. Your host of today is Reinout.
It is Sunday, July the 12th, and it's time for Game Consultant. So welcome. Welcome for listening. And today we have a jam-packed episode. It's a lot of stuff. I got Sammy talking about Bloxport.io. Currently, he and Vlad are in the program of Hype. Obviously, I did talk to Hype before with Borja, which was, I think, episode 32. So that's quite interesting. So if you want to know about Hype, then listen to episode 32. Meanwhile, Sammy is giving his view on his company, Bloxport.io. Next to that, I had a fun chat with Megadev's CEO, Rob, all about cheats. What do you say? Yeah. All about cheats. Well, that's illegal. Well, actually, it's not. And he knows what he's talking about. He has some kind of law background. So I guess he knows what he's doing. And I did an intake with him, and then he told me something about, well, this is how people do train in real sports. They go high up in the mountains, they train on certain altitude, and then they come downstairs, and then they play their matches, and they're very good. It's like training, make the game harder so that once you go into a tournament, you're officially pumped. Well, that's one way to say it. Anyways, next to that, I had last week Darcy from Torque Esports. That was the first half. So now we have the second half of that interview. The same counts actually for Rob with Plitch. So then the platform training software for pros, but also for us, the ones that think they can game. I do it in two parts. So it is fun, but also people can digest and then listen next week to the other part. Also, I thought about visibility because otherwise people might actually drop off. The interviews are sometimes 40, 45 minutes. That can be quite long. And I thought about it. As I said last week, Oliver Kern actually said to me, like, right, chop it. So I chopped it. I think that's that. Oh yeah, and of course Paul Thind is giving his take, his view and insights on the game news of last week. So it's quite full. Let's do this. So first item of the day is actually Bloxport.io. So Bloxport supports, esports clubs, streamers, influencers, federations, leagues. They have a dedicated white label mobile app. And so that way they can access new revenue sources and engage. So they can engage basically with their fan community. I liked it. I came across the guys when they entered the Hype program. They definitely look at cricket, they look at rugby, so it's not like they want to work with the top pro soccer teams, because all of them, if you talk Bayern Munich, Liverpool, Barcelona, I get on a regular basis companies that say, yeah, we have an agreement with one of those teams, and you wonder how many agreements can a team like that have. Anyways, I liked it a lot, and if you're interested, I have actually their pitch deck. So they're raising funding, which is also good to mention. I'm talking to Sammy for about 9-10 minutes. I think it's interesting. So if you're interested, let me know. I can do the intro to Sammy and Vlad. And in the meantime, enjoy the interview. So before we actually continue with episode with Darcy and his interview, the second part, a couple of weeks ago, I actually came in contact through Hype with Bloxport.io. Now, obviously, I have the link in my description, so you don't have to write it down. You can click it nicely after you've listened to this episode. Today, I'm actually talking to Sammy Kachan. And hey, Sammy, welcome.
Hi, Renaud. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. It's fun. Just quickly, an intro, Bloxport.io. I keep saying it.
Yeah, Bloxport is totally fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bloxport is a white label app solution for the sports industry, specifically esport.
Yeah.
We combine gamified community management with exclusive money can't buy benefits and try to bring fans, sponsors, and clubs together on one platform.
Got it. So there's also Vlad, he's CEO. What are your responsibilities?
Yeah, Vlad and I are co-founders. We both had this idea in summer 2019. I'm the chairman of Bloxport and supporting Vlad a little bit in the background and sponsorships, etc.
Cool. So you guys entered the program with Hype. How did that go?
It's going well. Very interesting workshops and meetings. We're getting in touch with a lot of people from the industry. It's great to extend the network and also learn to kind of steer the big ship during this COVID times.
Yeah, cool. Hey, and so I had a chat with you the other day with Vlad, and we talked a bit about focus points. And so we actually got to talk about what we first said. We don't need to go after Bayern Munich, for example, because they get already so much and can do it themselves. But you were looking at different types like cricket, rugby. Can you say something more about these kind of interests?
Sure. So basically, our focus are tier 2, tier 3 clubs. So basically, not the top-notch clubs that have sufficient funding to build a customized app. We are supporting really those who would like to have a monthly subscription, and also we target sports that have a high fan base, but are more niche. And cricket and rugby are a very good example of these. The millions, or not even billions, of fans following this sport. However, if you have a look at the technical coverage of it, it's very weak. And here we see our sweet spot.
Yeah. And how would you, for example, so let's say you're looking for a cricket team, for example, or a club?
It would be a club, really, where we can cover the team or many teams.
Yeah.
That's possible within the app.
Yeah.
And basically, we would like to provide a platform where the clubs can access additional revenue sources. However, provide fans with the access to their favorite players and to their club.
Yeah.
But also to the sponsoring partners, because nowadays it's very important to include the sponsoring partners in a more digital way. So let them convert the fan base, let them be in touch with them, because at the end of the day, they have an economic objective to kind of position a brand and get more visibility.
Yeah. Got it. Hey, and the business model, I mean, what will a team or a club make out of this? Is that on shared revenues or revenue share?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I mean, basically, we try to let clubs access this technology on a low price. So it's a monthly subscription, depending on how many services and features you would like to have.
Yeah.
It starts from €99 up to €1,500 per month. And then on top, we basically want to share the boat, let's say, with the club. And then there's a revenue share on every euro that is earned on the platform. And there we have established different revenue sources, such as betting, such as affiliate marketing through the different shops, merchandise, the premium membership. Then we have introduced something like a digital club membership so that you get the fans even closer to the club.
Yeah.
Advertisement. I mean, there are many ways to monetize this. And one additional one is, for instance, OTT, to make fans watch the games live on their mobile devices.
Yeah. Hey, and funding? Anything you want to say on that? Because I think you're raising.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for remembering me.
minor part.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, we have currently a very good traction and sales pipeline, and here we need to kind of sync development and app delivery. So in order to boost sales and delivery, we are looking for 1.5 million euros that we would like to raise with a soft cap of 500,000. So far, we have committed 350K of that. Yeah, basically, every angel that would like to learn more about this or any VCs, happily invited to contact me.
Yeah.
And to join the Bloxport boat.
Cool. Well, for everyone that's listening, I have obviously your details and those of Vlad in my description, so the LinkedIn. Anything I had more? No, actually, that's it. Thank you very much for explaining me Bloxport.io. In case people Perfect. Don't want to click on it and right away search for it. Bloxport.io. Thanks.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, Reinhard. Have you a nice day.
You too. Bye. Cheers.
So thank you, Sammy, Bloxport.io. The links are in the description and some further explanation of the company. So if you listen to the interviews, you should know, but it's always nice to read it back and click on the links and there you go. Next in line, Rob. Rob is talking about Megadev. Megadev sounds really cool, but originally I thought, hey, what a business model, cheats. Is that good? Is that legal? How does it work? And then he suddenly said esports, and Alpha said, well, huh? And it became a very interesting talk. As well, the intake that I had with Rob, but also this interview. And for the record, I it's more like a talk that I have with people that interviews. I just want to hear a few things. It's like we do regular talks. And he also sent me some links, so I will have those links on the blog or in the blog, whatever. And but meanwhile, just let's listen to what Rob has to say and his new training software / platform, Plitch.
So the last couple of episodes, I actually went into esports. And yeah, a lot of people are fascinated about it. And there it comes again. COVID-19 made esports go berserk. Everyone is watching games. Obviously, people are buying the new PlayStations, the Xbox, etc., etc. I don't have to tell you all of that. Everyone knows about it. In this episode, obviously, after this interview I'm having, I have the second part of Darcy with Torque Esports. But today I'm actually having an interesting other talk, and first I got approached and someone says, you need to have a look at megadev.info. So I had a look at it and it says something about cheats, and I thought like, so what is that all about? And I got to have an intake call with Robert Marochik, and he started to explain me about how it is legal, because that was my first question. Is our developers working with you on that? And then he says, yeah, actually it is. And in fact, it turns out the company is around the block already for a long time. But here comes the part. He actually explains me how cheats can actually help the esports professionals. Right, Robert, did I say that properly?
Yes, that was a great intro. So, thank you, Randall.
When I say you're already around the block for a long time, how long?
We founded the company in 2015, but our roots go back to 1998, in fact. So that's 22 years. It was my co-founder, Christian, when he just turned 18, he actually wrote his very first cheat on his PC back then. And he always did it for fun as a hobby. Then someday he had the idea, let's write some cheats and put them in a small program, in a so-called trainer software. So he published his first trainer and went from there. But he always did it just for himself until in 2007, he reached a point where he had covered multiple games and people were asking him about it, about those cheats. So he built a small forum into his website and suddenly people appeared and like, hey, you know, I'm playing mainly, you know, mainly Football Manager. That was his big thing. And then a big PC magazine from Germany, you know, it was a PC Games magazine. They approached him, told him, hey, this is quite cool what you're doing for the Football Manager. And we'd like to cover what you're doing. And, you know, Christian was like, wow, you know, he just, you know, finished his physics studies, and now he's working as a freelance web developer. And there was someone who said, hey, your hobby is actually greater than anything else you ever did. I guess that was the point where he realized, okay, that's cool. So he started building a community, but still really doing it as a hobby. You know, money came from his web development skills. And in 2012, he realized, this is so much work. I'm going to need to have people actually help me finance it, because people kept asking him for new cheats for other games and stuff like that. And he had to buy those games, you know, take care of the website. And he started to build a super, super rudimentary monetizing tool into his community that he had built back then. Right about that time we met, and shortly after became friends. In fact, he asked me whether I could write him a couple of texts for his new website. I was studying law at the time, intellectual property law, to be quite frank. I mean, I guess you will dwell on that a little bit later right now. Anyways, so I agreed to write the text. We became friends. I loved what he was doing, because I was in a position where I was so overworked with what I was doing with studying and everything, that I just basically quit PC gaming, since there just was no more time left. And he introduced me to the world of custom built cheats to make my life easier and enjoy my games again. Just be like, look, Rob, when you're playing for yourself, why don't you give yourself God mode? You're a really bad gamer. And he's right. I am really bad at fights. And just enjoy the world, whatever it is. I was playing Metro Exodus at the time, and was constantly running out of ammunition. I got so fed up. So he wrote me my first customized, personalized trainer. And I thought, that's great. And if he can do that for me, we need to find a solution where we can do it for everybody. Because, I mean, let's be honest. Once real life shows up at your door and you're tangled up in work, maybe even family, whatever it is, well, PC gaming costs a lot of time, and you're not going to have a lot of time. And that was the initial business idea. That was the spark that said, okay, let's build a software that gives all these people exactly the right tool, the right assistant to still enjoy PC gaming, even with super limited times and thus super limited skills. And in 2015, we founded the company. Yeah. So that's the story where we came
from. Am I right if I say you're offering now the cheat for 2,300 games?
That is absolutely correct. So we have just hit 2,300 games a couple of days ago. Now we have 2,322 games. Again, this is a very big thing. I cannot stress enough. It's single-player games or only single-player mode of games. So it never is any multiplayer. That's
got it. And so let's hit that to the fact that you suddenly said to me, esports, and that actually ticked the box with me, where I thought like, oh, and how does that work?
Yeah, that was quite interesting, actually. As I said before, we came from a world where we tried to make games easier for people who wouldn't have enough time or skills to otherwise, you know, figure out the game. But it eventually dawned to us, in fact, my little brother played a huge role in that. He's younger, and he's really a lot into esports. And he said, look, I love this game. Sorry, I can't remember which one it was, but he said he would like to have it a little bit harder. Can we do this one cheat the other direction? And then it dawned to us, look, we can make the game harder or easier. It doesn't matter. Yep. Technology is the same. So we started picking out games where we said, okay, these games have a competitive angle. For some reason, you might want to situatively make them harder for yourself. Maybe because you're a super good gamer, maybe because you're thinking certain metrics in the game just aren't where you would like to have them. That's what you can do. So we started integrating our so-called hardcore and even worse are the nightmare cheats that really give your game a certain angle that you've never looked at it before. And with that approach, I mean, now you can make your games harder. We thought this is interesting for esports too. And that's where it came into place.
So besides the esports, how does your model work? So the business model for people that are listening, is it consumer? Is it business driven? Because I can. Do you need the game developer involved or not? How does it work?
Mm-hmm. So let me start with the legal basis. How does it work from a technical and legal perspective? So I can pick you up there, and then I'll walk you through our business model. What we do, I don't know if you remember the Game Genie from back in the days, really in the 90s. It was basically a cheat cartridge for the Nintendo Entertainment System. You put it into the cartridge, and on top you put the game. So it was like a middle layer between the actual Nintendo Entertainment System and the game you wanted to play. And this cartridge, it operated in the console's memory. So what you had when you started the game, you had a menu then that could where you could pre-select certain values that you would like to alter, and it would actually alter the values only in the memory in the console. So the Game Genie did not look at the game's code per se at all. It just looked at what is changing in the memory. So this is the basic idea we transported into 21st century when saying, okay, what we are looking at is only the computer's memory, and we're not looking at the game's code or whatsoever. And so this is the technical perspective. Just look at it very simply said, if you fire a gun that has 9 rounds, somewhere in the memory, it will say, if trigger pulled, subtract 1 round. Well, we find that routine, reroute it, write a new routine at the new place in memory, and send a new value back. Mm-hmm. Let's say -1, +1. So you fire the guy and you have 9 rounds, and like half a second later, not even half a second, you know, fraction of a second later, you have 9 rounds again because we just filled it up. So by doing so, that is the technical perspective. Here comes the legal perspective. And again, since I did study intellectual property law, I do know a little bit about what I'm talking. And this has been one of my major focus during my last year in studies, as you can imagine. So what I have found out is that the computer's memory and the code that runs therein is proprietary by all jurisdictions in the world to the operational system and not to whatever software it is that is manipulating the code in its first way. That being said, let's look at the operation system that we're working on. It's Microsoft. It's Microsoft Windows, in fact. Microsoft says, as they are an open platform, you can research it in their developer statements, that you can basically do on the Microsoft platform what you want, especially within Microsoft's memory. This gives us like a carte blanche to go in there and change the memory. Now, if you would go to a Sony PlayStation, or ironically enough, even a Microsoft Xbox, we would have to ask the provider of the operation system, Sony or Microsoft, in fact, hey, are we allowed to alter the memory on your in your operation system on your device? And so we would need to buy a license from them effectively. That we do not have to do in PC games. So this is the legal perspective. That's why we don't actually have to ask developers for permission, because we are covered by European and international law standards. However, it was one of our very first approaches to always stay in close contact with the industry, because we realized we want to be part of this industry and we don't want to be like in a hacker niche. But this is out of, you know, we're going too far in this question. Now let's go back to the business model. So we said, let's create a software that covers them all. So all-in-one software that you can download for free, and you can, for each of those 2,300 games, you can try out 1 to 5 cheats for free. Yes, does it work? If it works and if you like it, you can buy a yearly membership. It's we have 3 different models here. And upon buying this membership, we are giving you a 1-year license to use our software with this, with all the cheats that are included. And after 1 year, you have to renew it, of course.
Okay. Got it.
That is the business model.
Because I'm reading here also, you sent me a blog, which the link I will have on my blog too, more than 650 patches per month for a fixed price. So,
yes.
And so you correct. Pay once for all the services. So that's on a monthly basis. You pay one amount.
You actually pay it on a yearly basis. Yeah. So you only pay once a year. Our highest membership currently is priced at 40 euros. And you are right. We are, with that, you're getting all the services and included our, well, last month we had 650 patches that we have covered and automatically delivered to the user's client. Yeah. This is, you know, when you look at the community of the so-called trainer makers, that's what we call ourselves, we're trainer maker. And there's a community where people do it as a hobby. But the problem with having hobby people building cheats is, well, they do it for the initial version of a game. But, you know, games these days, they are patched constantly. And with every patch, there is a very high probability that the cheats or the chains of memory, whatever you want to call them, they will not withstand the patch. So they will not work anymore. And this is a huge problem. And, you know, the hobby guy, they might do the first version, first patch, maybe second patch. The third one, fourth one, we have games, it's in the same article, that have been patched over 100 times. Who on earth would patch a game and rebuild his cheats 100 times for the sake of fun? Well, you know, and that's what we do as professionals. That's where we differ from the rest.
Hey, and then one of the games that is doing really well, it's a German game, Anno 1800, I need to say.
Yes.
Hey, and so you say it broke all records. When it breaks all records on your platform, what does it mean?
This game is an overachiever par excellence. It came out and it spiked our revenues almost instantly. Literally, we didn't know why. I mean, the Anno series has always been one of our favorite series. You know, it's beautiful made. It's just a fun game to play. Personally, I love the Anno series too. 1404 still is one of my favorite games. But when Anno 1800 came out, we just couldn't believe our eyes. Anno has persistently been in the top 10 or even top 2 games for over a year now since it came out. And with that, I mean, not only the amount of game starts, so how often is a game started while our software is running, we can measure that, but also the amount of unique users within our software that are playing Anno. Both those numbers, Anno is simply unrivaled. Of course, every now and then there's another game that comes up, but only for a month. It's like a spike, and then it's Anno again, just, you know, boasting through it. It is unbelievable. This game is great.
Got it.
So that was Rob with the training software, Plitch. So have a look at that. I mean, quite interesting. Plitch.com, Plitch.com. Next up is Paul Fint. Paul, actually on the west coast of United States, has a different insight in news that I actually might have. I'm based in Europe. I still think there's a lot of difference between Europe and US in terms of actually, if you would listen back on an episode I was doing with Kate Edwards, which was 23, we talked about cultural differences, and that's a lot, but also news. I wanted to do a section on my site where I want to talk to people not only about gaming, but also about stuff that is happening in the world and how we as game developers, gaming people, are looking at that, how we can do something about it, if we should do something about it. So it's going to be a video blog, a video podcast, whatever you want to call it. And definitely I want to have Paul involved as sort of a co-host, where we're going to talk to people. And basically, we talked about diversity. And the first thing he said right, two white males and one Indian dude, that's not diversity. So here's a shout out to everyone that has an opinion about what is happening in real life. I mean, we're seeing racism, we're seeing sexism, hate, all kinds of stuff. What are we doing in gaming? What are we doing wrong? What are we doing good? I want to see the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I want to discuss. And yeah, it's going to be all recorded by video. I want to have it live on my Twitch channel, which has right now one follower, which I think is sort of an alter ego of myself. But it's not like I want to get lots of Twitch followers, but it's something where I want to have video blogs on my site where people can look back and well, obviously, if it's live, you can ask questions, get involved, and after that, you can actually look back and see what other people think. Because from anything, I would say we can learn. And by improving, we need to start debating, talking, discussing, feeling, sharing, vibing, whatever. So, but first now, Paul and his week on games. Come on in, Paul.
Thanks, Ryan. Hi, everyone. Paul Thind again here from sunny California. This week, quite a few interesting stories that I looked at. I was thinking a lot about diversity and inclusion in the games industry. Seems as though that, you know, it's touching upon quite a few of the stories I'm reading. And, you know, just starting to wonder if gaming execs, you know, have harmful intent, or if they're just, you know, there's just a lack of interest or empathy in treating diversity as an issue, you know, that they personally should dedicate time to address, right? Discussion of diversity, you know, whether at conferences or otherwise, you know, is kind of treated as a token matter, you know, for purposes these days of political correctness and, you know, not a pressing business problem to solve. You know, so if the current news cycle is kind of changing that attitude and energizing executives to step up, it seems as though that's happening. You know, it seems as though the most impactful action that they can take is to kind of approach this, you know, much more different than a PR issue. It's more foundational. It's structural. It's you know, obviously systemic. So it needs to have, you know, change. So I've been trying to look at articles that way, and then just kind of take a step back and see, you know, how things could change if those things were reframed. So the first article I thought was really interesting was from our Joachim Akeren. He obviously does his own great podcast called Elite Game Developers, and Reinout has him do updates here every week. He's on holiday right now, but he's a great friend, and love his writing, and his podcast is fantastic. If you get a chance to listen to that, he interviews investors in the games industry, some amazing CEOs, and also developers and all in between, on how, you know, they're creating the games companies of the future. Joachim actually talked about advisory boards in this article that I'm referencing. He had come up with like kind of key aspects, and I thought it was really interesting because I've advised companies and I've put advisory boards together. He listed actually, you know, the current engagements that he has, which are quite extensive, and really it was a great kind of bird's eye view into how he looks at advisory roles, and then just kind of trying to give advice to developers who want to create an advisory board, kind of what they should be thinking about. One was, you know, expectations of the founders for the advisor's contribution. So, you know, really looking at the area's involvement, where they'd like to get advice, and the kind of format of the work, and that kind of thing, so that everybody's kind of clear from the beginning. Another was kind of the incentives for the advisor, and kind of how they would compensate the advisor in a way, which would be, you know, with stocks or other agreements, or equity, early equity, and you know, obviously attaching a cliff to that, and really trying to keep the advisor engaged for long term. And then the third was kind of the formality of the advisor role. So just kind of looking at, you know, if you have to terminate or, you know, what that looks like and how you should think through that. So that was a great article and really helpful, actually, I think, for developers. So one thing I'm trying to do personally is kind of frame articles, you know, emphasizing the priority on diversity and inclusion. Right. So when I think about this article, for example, I would also look at it as like, you know, what could a diverse advisory board bring to my organization if I'm the, you know, CEO or if I'm the developer and I'm looking at, you know, getting advice or I'm looking at getting connections in different parts of the world. With you know, all different types of publishers or companies, you know, what does my advisory board look like from a diverse level? And that would mean, you know, obviously race, obviously nation of origin, you know, gender, age, for example. How much experience do these advisory board members have? And how can if I start framing things with that in mind first as the foundation of the advisory board, you know, how can I create an advisory board that's kind of all inclusive, like the games industry looks like for the players side, right? So, I mean, we don't realize how many different types of genres and forms exist in kind of games in general, you know, without a diverse group of people kind of coming up with ideas. And if you don't have that, then obviously that none of that thinking will flow into the games themselves. And then, you know, along with that, you know, all the models that are that have come from different countries and different places that got us to where we are today in the habits of people that are playing those games and the business models, you know, the free-to-play model, for example, and others. You know, you just, I don't think you can have, you know, you know insight across, you know, all different ways of looking at business problems that you'll come up with. So I think, you know, this is an area where, yeah, just thinking through and maybe adding that, you know, I thought that was interesting. So another article that I liked this week, got a lot of views on my LinkedIn, was about 1600, 1700, was one from Game Daily Biz and Wilhelm Tat, good friend for many years in the games industry. Great guy, was at Rovio before and quite a few other companies, and now he's at GSN running Bingo Bash. Yeah, once again, he, you know, he talked about gamers not getting any younger. In 2018, you know, people aged 65 plus outnumbered children under 5 years old globally for the first time in history. And, you know, just the way he's approaching, there's just a lot of learnings in kind of the way he's approached this game, and just kind of taking some data and proving it out, you know, with mobile gamers being predominantly women, largest group of mobile gamers are 55 plus. And yeah, it was a interesting article on just how to like look at that demographic differently and how to design and create games for that demographic differently. Once again, this kind of points to, you know, if you did have an advisory board or people in the organization that can steer and help with, you know, kind of foresight and different ways of looking at how to create great game experiences, it's a good thing. So I do want to mention a couple of other things. One was Traplight Studios, the studio I mentioned from last week, actually raised $9 million this week. So that Battle Legion game, yeah, is looking good. Congrats to the guys, Sami and Riku. I've known those guys for, I think, like 8-9 years now, and they've been always a hardworking team. Looks like there might be, you know, another great Finnish success story there, and it's really good to see the creativity and Finnish mobile game studios continuing to kick ass, so great stuff. And then the other story that just came in was for Ubisoft. Yeah, I guess all week there's been some shakeups there, I'm sure Reinout will get into this a little bit more. But I just saw that there's been executive shakeups on the top level, and it's exactly what we've been talking about in this segment. Maybe change is coming. Hopefully it is, and I'm sure it won't be the last time we talk about this topic. That's it for me. If you'd like to get a hold of me, it's paul.thind@gmail.com, paul.thind@gmail, and LinkedIn, Paul Thind. Thanks, Reinout, and talk to you soon.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you very much for mentioning that you're from sunny California while we actually are from rainy Europe. So next thing in the line of items is actually Darcy. It's part two of our amazingly fun conversation that we had a week ago. So part one is actually already online, which you can find back in episode 34, as this is episode 35. Makes sense, right? Darcy and I talked about Torque Esports, about their content strategy, lots. Today, actually, it's more like fan engagement, and I'm asking him some more stupid questions, which he is very generous to actually answer, and don't make fun of me. Now, actually, it's a fun interview. So I hope you enjoy it. Part two of Darcy with Torque Esports.
That's funny. Fan engagement. And that was exactly, you're saying exactly similar to what I said a week ago to Nicholas. He's from Game Buddy. When you look at Twitch, you see all those chats passing by, and my son is streaming a bit, and I'm trying to follow. And then in the meantime, you need to stream, game, talk, and then people are talking about everything. So fan engagement, Game Buddy actually came up with giving live challenges. So that actually, that is about fan engagement. So the streamer, the gamer can actually make money off the live challenges. So the fans can choose out of 4 or 5 challenges. And then the streamer / gamer has to fulfill that challenge. Is something like that interesting for you guys? I mean, if you look at engagement, what are you looking? What is the best engagement? Can you give a definition of what you're looking at?
Yeah, well, I just go look at WinView, WINVIEW. So WinView is exactly what you just described. Their history has been in regular sports. So you can sit down with your friends, whether they're in your, on your couch, or they're somewhere else, and you're on social. WinView gives you and your friends and others, the opportunity to kind of engage with the game. So you can predict who's going to win, what's going to happen in the first quarter versus the second quarter. Is this player going to, achieve, the scoring goal? What are the things that are important that the fans chat about anyway? So you really kind of taking advantage of what's already all the conversation already happening, and you're making it an official challenge that you can be smarter than your friends about this particular sport. And that's what fans are. They're fanatics. The word comes from fanatics, and they want to be engaged. They want to do more than just be, we would call them armchair quarterbacks here. They want to be involved. And in real sports, you can only go so far. In esports, chances are you are part of a community already, so you go beyond the chat where it's just noise and you talking with each other, and now actually challenges each other. And you said it, people can get real money, they can get prizes, there's achievements in that, and then you cross over those achievements and let those best fans play against those people that were just finishing up a match. So now the fan engagement goes beyond, crosses over. You step right from your couch into the world of playing if you achieve a certain level. So we see that, both in terms of kind of the personal fulfillment, you get something out of it, whether it's a prize or cash or just that notoriety that everybody's hungry for, or you literally use that tool to drive those fans into the game and have them as participants and players. And because we have a tournament and match platform, I mean, you could go from casually answering trivia questions with each other to 1 second later, okay, let's all go play together and set up a ladder on our UMG system. So, it's kind of the carrot and the donkey, that's kind of our means of getting people involved. And we want to, circle them and give them tools and engagement, whether they're playing or not.
Yeah. Maybe a strange question. Do you think the esports, well, we're talking about esports and we say global, but somehow I always have a feeling that the esports scene is a bit different in the US than it is in Europe, and obviously completely different than Asia. But you guys are actually on both continents, North America and Europe. Are you seeing differences in terms of esports?
I think differences maybe in the titles, the types of games they play. As far as the players I think esports is definitely a great. It shrinks the divide between continents and geographies. It's a pure digital native that's in there. They probably already think much more globally than most. But it's local and global at the same time. Everybody that plays a Fortnite match, they probably play with their friends from school. Probably play with their friends in the neighborhood. So in that respect, it's local. But all of a sudden, anybody could jump into that match, or they could all be in a waiting room somewhere, and anybody from any country can be there. So there's kind of both, right? There's both a local and a global to it. And as far as behavior goes, gamers seem to be gamers. They don't see a lot. Of course, if it's an Asian gamer, that is different. They tend to spend a lot more time socially engaged than even playing the game. They're on TikTok going, chatting away before they play. But you're also seeing games getting embedded into these social platforms. Look at what just happened. Mixer went off and did a deal with Facebook. So suddenly now you've got the biggest, large social network and large gaming company all together. And I think, that's all. But I talked about Tencent and their ambitions in the space. So there's some, that crossover of social and gaming, I think will further both increase the global nature of things, but also create more opportunities for local. So I like that. I mean, I love that we could do local and global at the same time on the same platform. Most times, if you're in television or music or those things, they definitely have geographic boundaries.
Yeah.
Much more than gaming.
So then think global, act local kind of principle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Concerning brands, you just mentioned Facebook Gaming. Facebook has some issues right now. Microsoft, Sony, I think everyone is sort of political correct of now saying like, okay, Facebook, we're not spending ad dollars, but I mean, two consoles are coming out. So I guess anytime soon, they will come back to Facebook. But how important are brands for your organization? Stream Hatchet obviously can sort of do something with data in terms of what value does esport bring to your marketing budget, right?
Yeah. Well, look, you mentioned the billion or whatever the number is. If you look at the pie of that billion, the two top categories, sponsorship and advertising, whether it's teams, players, events, that's number one. And number two is merchandise. So all that is brands. Companies that want to present their products in the form of merchandise, or just the normal kind of, I'll sponsor an event, I'll sponsor a platform, I'll sponsor a show, I'll be an advertiser, but just treat me like you normally do, although it's not linear anymore. How does my ad advertising isn't about how many eyeballs. Of course, there's lots of eyeballs in this space, which is the first attraction, but the reality is we can show attribution. We can show exactly what happens in this digital native world and this pure digital thing we call competitive gaming. We know what's happening in real time immediately. And that's the insights of that real time feedback to a brand and a sponsor. That's critical. Yeah, I want to know if I put a dollar in. I don't want to wait for 30 days for somebody to tell me what happened. Nielsen giving me a panel report. I want to know right now in the data how'd I do? You know, how many attributions did I get? What actually happened post show? What did the audience do? Did they follow my message? Did they convert? That stuff's all there now. And then, you know, in this and in gaming, it is hyper real time. You know, so that's a big difference for a brand that's used to having a linear presence and having a, you know, an ad insertion here and there, and then looking at results post that might be a week later, and then trying to course correct when they figure out that campaign doesn't work. And in this case, you can present stuff in game. You know, we talked about being a publisher earlier. One of the big powers of being a publisher is I get all that real estate in the game. In a racing game, when you're watching one of our races, like All Stars or Legends or, you know, the Trans Am or Skip Barber Racing, you look at that online. Yeah. You see the signs, the livery on the car. That's all space that we can change immediately. We give people in-game presence. So that's a whole different ad unit that they've never seen before at that scale. Sure, in racing, they've gone out and put stickers on cars before. If that you know, who saw the sticker? Nobody knows. Yeah. You know, nobody knows if there was even a conversion. And back, you know, in the days of motorsports, and even now in motorsports, it's still a bit of ambiguous of how your money's doing. It's really just a, you know, it's a tool for you to bring your friends and family and others to these races. And hopefully, the money you've spent has some results. But in the esports world, or, you know, if you can put your message right in the game and, you know, somebody saw it because of computer vision, said they, you know, their character was in that vicinity of that message, or they clicked through it, you know, it's not a click anymore. It's an action. And it's a, you know, they actually did something, like I downloaded a skin for something in the game, or I went and got a, you know, coupon that somebody was offering me. The nice thing about racing, it's natural. It's not like in, you know, I've seen some other schemes where there's logos and banners, you know, MasterCard banner in a, you know, a shoot 'em up game, a first person shooter game. It kind of doesn't feel like it makes sense as much. So what's, you know, the fantasy games is going to have a little tougher time. Sure, you could put a skin on a, you know, on your character or those things, and you know, some of that'll work. But in this kind of traditional, whether it's, you know, an NBA 2K or a race or a Madden match or, you know, FIFA, it's natural inside that game. There's space there. So sponsors and advertisers, they need to learn this stuff. They're very important to them. Of course, they're learning now. You can see they're pulling out, as you said, of these social places where, you know, their message may not necessarily be the culture of the company. You know, right now the flavor of the day is, you know, you're doing a lot of other things in your social network that aren't appropriate for my brand. So I'm going to go and find another place. And I think the other place they need to move, if they're in the social, they're probably trying to reach that same kind of, you know, age group. So why not go in and pivot to this esports space where it's appropriate for your brand?
And in terms of all these events being canceled, the offline events, do you think that the audience is now a bit spoiled? Because I can actually, I can have 3-4 screens. I mean, over at my place, everyone basically, iPad Pro, screen, another screen, a couple of phones, laptops. I mean, we're sitting in our lazy chair, couch, whatever, and we can watch it. I mean, what we just said, going out to Formula One or the soccer match. Yeah, we want to be there on a Sunday. But then still, we're sort of with esports, it's like, yeah, we can watch it everywhere now. And since everything is streamed anyways, what's your take? I mean, are we going to the events later on if it's allowed again?
You know, it's going to be it's a tough call. I mean, the traditional sports, you know, the fans will come back. That's, you know, that's where they want to be. Everybody wants to be at the event because that's where you rub shoulders with all your, you know, we said local and global, with your local, you know, all your buddies, and you go out and do that. But like you said, you can appreciate that in your own home now, and people have seen it. And, you know, in the digital natives, we're already there. So they weren't weren't buying tickets and going through gates anywhere. Yeah. Maybe at a, you know, a big ESL event or something that they would go, but those are scarce. You know, that was for the elite or people that were lucky enough to get there and it was in their town. This idea of everything remote, I think it's, you know, it's only 6 months of this, but it's pretty embedded in people. I think people are realizing right across the board, whether it's about going to an event or just collaborating with your friends, I think people will, I think a lot of them are never going back to a physical place. And we've always been about remote. You know, that's what UMG does. We produce very few local events. You know, we did a few LAN events. That's good for somebody who wants to be involved. And that's the ESL level stuff. And that, by the way, I don't think it's going to go away. I mean, you're going to have your big Lilo Legends and all the things that we typically have seen. It's not going to go away. But I think the groundswell is below that. It's where all the other gamers can be now. They've even more collaborated and done things remotely. Our entire production is already set up that way to be remote. When you watch our productions, people are used to seeing the, you know, like we call it the Hollywood Squares or the the Brady Bunch effect, right? A bunch of cards on the screen. That's okay because I see the faces of people. You know, I'm not just listening on Discord. I'm actually seeing things, and it's these tools are all you know, they're getting much more mature. So I just think, you know, some will go back on traditional sports. Absolutely, they're going to want to wait, but you also got to think about, you know, we've got in the U.S. at least in some of our areas, we've got people retrenching because there's the second wave of this pandemic's upon a lot of the areas. So it's not ending. So if they go another, I don't know how long it takes to create behavior in humans, but it seems like in the short attention span of our youth and the people that are in the esports competitive gaming space, I think 6 months of behavior might be enough to just solidify this forever. So those, you know, those that were thinking that young crowd was going to come back to a regular sport, that's over. I don't think you're going to see that in the esports. I just see more and more happening in the remote stuff, and I believe that we'll see that growth in that area surpassing, you know, what happens. And you can only put so many people in seats in a venue anyway. So I just see it kind of becoming the smaller part of the opportunity.
Yeah. Last question. If people are in esports and they find this very interesting to do some expectation management, what are you looking for if they would approach you? Are there any interest points that you're looking for in the market right now?
What was the question?
More like, so if people are listening, they're in esports, what are you looking for before they approach you? I mean, otherwise you get lots of people basically sending you emails, but do you have some focus points right now in terms of partnerships or maybe potential M&A? Really, can you pinpoint it maybe what your main interest is for 2020?
Yeah, I guess I touched on it earlier, but our interest is what content's interesting to the audience, because everything else we talked about, whether it's about sponsors and advertisers, whether it's about brands, whether it's about just purely the volume of gameplay, if the content's not interesting, nobody's coming to you. So I think being much more content in our world, absolutely. We've got the platform to support, you know, a great amount of scale in that. We've got a vehicle now called UMG TV, which is a place for it to live, and it's, you know, getting much more popular. So content, you know, bring it on. We're interested in any content, if it, you know, audio, video, gameplay, anything kind of in the space. It's noisy when you go into these public places like Twitch. It's hard to find things. You know, there's no real kind of a guide, although I know they recently announced that they're putting a guide in there, but it's still not organized from the back end. You know, everybody that wants to play can be on Twitch. It's not as organized. So I think, you know, just having that space where we are, where we decided to take a methodical approach. You know, I love Twitch and YouTube and these places. They give you a reach and eyeballs, but in the end, the value for us as a brand and for our customers is pretty mitigated, because the value is actually for the people who own that, not for the people who are in the brands in there. You don't get any data about the customers. You don't really get the things you need from these platforms as a brand, or even as somebody like us who wants to grow our content. So eventually, just like in, you know, the days of early streaming, you know, that I was involved in, everybody said, oh, let's use YouTube because it's cheap and free, and that's great. So go there. But you have to have a more private kind of one-to-one relationship, and you need to have the data. And that's what it's all about. It's about the data. And if the platform keeps the data, then what's your real value there? And if they take, they keep the majority of your, of the, you know, the ad revenue, then, you know, you sort of, you know, if you're a content provider, it's just a nominal amount of money you can make there. And you can see it's being demonetized already, right? It's those social platforms are trying to expand their reach. Twitch is doing more traditional sports. They're doing TV shows. I mean, they everybody's got up their game in this space to be relevant. And I think so content for sure. Bring us more content. Look, business intelligence. It's just, again, it's about data. So more insights we can have, the more types of data we can have using computer vision, for instance, as a tool where I don't have have to have an API to a game to know what's going on. I can just scrape the screen and get a lot of insights. There's lots of AI stuff that's out there. I've seen some really exciting little companies growing up, and we're keeping our eye on it, and we're also growing it. So, you know, if anything is out there that's machine-driven, automation, we're all over it, because all that does is create scale and we don't have to have people doing machine stuff. So that's kind of the digital native world. So I'd say those are the two things, you know, the more content, more business insights, more data.
Cool. Thank you very much. I think very insightful to get to know the company better. And 60 days, you say, yeah? So it's July, August. So mid-August is then the schedule for going.
Yeah, we're on the trajectory to be there by September, and earlier is better. So hopefully everything goes as planned. And of course, you know, that doesn't always go as planned. So I would just say, you know, by September, that's our ambition. And if we get there sooner, it's great. But, you know, September would be the right time.
Cool. Then I'll keep an eye on you guys.
Yeah, I look forward to being back. And maybe we should have you on one of our shows soon, too. I think that'd be great.
Love it. Love it.
Awesome.
Cool. I am going to wish you a happy July the 4th.
Thank you.
It's are you guys working today? I'm hearing lots of people free.
A lot of people are off. I'm working. You know, I always work. I don't really think of the holidays. But most people are off today. And, you know, it's weird. It's a weird July 4th because there's very, very few celebrations and fireworks displays and all the normal things that happen. So I think a lot of people are going to wonder what this 4th is all about. It's kind of weird, but we're all off and we're all trying to find out what we're going to do in this, when we're all sitting at home. So there'll be a lot of Zoom things going on in the next 2 days. Maybe there'll be some Zoom fireworks.
Zoom fireworks and esports. That's most likely. Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
You too. Cheers.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hope you enjoyed it. It was a full episode. It was what I called Esports Be Like. That's episode 35. It was Blogsport.io, Megadev with their new platform called Plitch, Torque Esports of Darcy, and obviously Paul Thin with this new section. And don't forget about my video podcast that I want to do. Everything about what is happening in the world in and around gaming. I want to talk to people. So if you are interested, you don't have to have a company or something. You can be a game developer. You can be an audio engineer. You can do Q&A. I want to talk to people that represent the gaming space. You don't have to be major successful. I want you to be someone that feels he or she has a voice. So interested? Let me know. Everyone can find the contact on my page, podcast, gameconsultant.com. So for now, ciao for now.
This was all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Game Consultant. Tune in next week for a brand new episode. And remember, do share this podcast with other members of the games industry.